This is the web stream of KBOO Portland. KBOO is 100% community supported. If you have not yet become a member, go to the website kboo.fm and click on the tip jar.
So slow, take courage, turn the volume up. It's Labor Radio.
Welcome to Labor Radio on KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. The show that's about working people, for working people, by working people. I'm your host, Megan Heiss. It's spring training in Portland, and we're gearing up for the labor fight back. Today, we'll hear from two of the featured speakers for this weekend's regional troublemaker school here in Stumptown. We'll also hear a preview of the Bad Eaters campaign plan for local action by United Students Against Sweatshops. So let's take a swing at our agenda for today. The 2013 Portland Troublemaker School is coming up on Saturday, April 13th at the NECA IBEW Training Center on Airport Way. The event is organized by a local committee of labor movement activists in conjunction with Labor Notes, a media and organizing project that has been the voice of union activists who want to put the movement back in the labor movement since 1979. The one-day conference is open to all union and non-union workers and community activists interested in building a stronger movement for economic justice. KBOO's news crew member and troublemaker in training, Robin Ryan, interviewed Mark Brenner, director of Labor Notes magazine, about the state of the labor movement.
I have been a labor activist since the mid-1990s. Before I came to Labor Notes, I worked a lot with living wage campaigns around the country, trying to secure higher wages through local city ordinances, sometimes statewide ordinances, to make sure that workers who did contracting for the government weren't making poverty wages, and was also active in my local Jobs of Justice chapter and my own local union, and just was really happy that I got a chance to come and be sort of a full-time troublemaker here at Labor Notes.
How would you characterize the current state of organized labor?
Well, I'd say we're in a pickle. We've been really squeezed by the economic crisis. Even before the meltdown in 2008, working people have been under the gun, and unions in particular have been a steady target for corporations and increasingly, you know, governments to try and put a wrecking ball to what we have left in terms of working class organization. And so that's just accelerated since 2008. And I would say we're really, all hands on deck in terms of making sure that the labor movement makes its way into a better and brighter future.
What role do you believe mainstream media has played in that?
Well, I think that especially since 2009, you've seen a really interesting shift. You know, right after the economic meltdown in 2008, everyone across the country was really clear that it was the sort of top corporate executives and the bankers who were really at fault for our mortgage meltdown and for the financial crisis. You know, everybody understood that the bankers and the CEOs were the ones who got us into this mess. And then I think the media played a really pernicious role in shifting the focus after 2009, you know, after the immediate crisis for the banks was over, onto working people, in particular public sector workers, and really creating a kind of them versus us sentiment among working people. You know, like, I don't have a union, and I don't have a pension, and I don't have employer-paid health care. Why should you have that? And really fed a lot of the animosity, particularly towards government workers, and I think that continues to this day. I think we see teacher bashing and postal worker bashing, and I think that, you know, we're going to see another round of auto worker bashing in the very near future. It's really, really been, in my mind, a shameful betrayal of what the media's role should be in a democratic society.
What impact have 21st century technologies had on organizing?
The best example is probably Walmart. We're seeing workers who work for Walmart or have worked at Walmart able to connect to each other and connect to people who are trying to organize Walmart in ways that they just couldn't have done even 5 years ago. So in that sense, it's helped people to get information, to find each other, to connect, But I think it's really just enhanced. It's just another tool, you know, in the same way a cell phone's a tool, the same way that the phone itself was a tool in our organizing. And it's really no substitute for relationship building and the kind of real trust that you need to do scary things like stand up to your boss and building that collective will to take those risky actions. You know, you're not going to do that on Facebook alone. You really need to kind of connect on a human level with people. But it's expanded our ability to find one another, to communicate laterally, and to really kind of get information out. Certainly our reach as an alternative media project, which is part of what LaborNotes does, is really expanded dramatically with the advent of some of these social media technologies.
And can you tell me, what do you believe events like Troublemaker School have to offer with regard to what the labor, organized labor, needs?
Well, like we said at the top of the show, organized labor is really in quite a state of disarray. We're under constant attack from corporations and increasingly from elected officials. And I think that what's been really inspiring to me, despite the hardships of the last 5 years, is that the interest and the hunger for ways to organize and ways to fight back has just exploded. We've never seen more interest in the kind of nuts and bolts of how to organize against your boss, how to get together with your coworkers and stand up for your rights that we've seen since the crisis. And what that tells me is that whether you're talking about the unionized workforce or the non-union workforce, that there's a real hunger to figure out how to get, you know, more of what we deserve, not just what we'll settle for. And so I think, you know, it's in that spirit that we started organizing these local one-day, what we call troublemaker schools, as a way to really help people in local areas connect with each other, get some real nuts and bolts skills, recharge your batteries, because I think one of the things that at least in my experience from doing this for a long time, is that it's really grueling and really hard to, you know, stay in the struggle for the long term. And getting together with folks who are of like mind and have, you know, similar interest in organizing working people for a bigger voice and a stronger role in the way that that our society functions can really give you that shot in the arm that you need sometimes to get back out there into the fight. And so, you know, for all those reasons, we've been expanding the one-day troublemaker schools that we've been doing since 2008. And it's been amazing. We just meet so many wonderful people, and we, you know, really see the best of what you know, working people, union and non-union, can do when they have the space and the time to put their mind to collective activity.
One of the Troublemaker School topics is about beating apathy. Can you lay out for me what you see in terms of causes and remedies?
Well, I think that apathy seems pretty pervasive to most people who are organizing and who are trying to get people to do things. I think it's one of the most common kind of problems that union activists identify. And I take a fairly controversial view on apathy. I don't actually think people are apathetic. I think that most people, the vast majority of people, care pretty strongly about a lot of things. It's our job as organizers to find out what it is that they care very strongly about and really critically figure out a way to inspire confidence that we have a concrete plan that can actually change for the better, the things that they're very passionate about, the things that they care about. Because I think people are also pretty rational. You know, if you see people stick their neck out and get it cut off, then, you know, you're disinclined to stick your neck out. But the more you get a sense of, you know, winnability and confidence that, you know, we have a plan, we can organize together in a way that will actually provide concrete results and not get us you know, tied up in knots with our employers, I think people are much more likely to engage. And so a lot of what beating apathy is about is figuring out how to, number one, identify what it is that people care about and, you know, they feel deeply, you know, issues that they feel deeply about, and number two, really craft what we call a plan to win, to actually get some concrete results on the issues that people feel so deeply about. And if you can do those two things, I've seen it in my own organizing, and I've seen it time and time again in other people's stories from across the labor movement and across the activist scene, that apathy melts away.
I don't think people are so much apathetic anymore. They can look around and they can see the destitution, the desperation. What we have to battle now is atrophy, which is a condition the body gets after a coma. It has to relearn again how to move.
Oh, and that couldn't be a better diagnosis of what's going on with the labor movement. Really, for the last 30 years, we've been very poorly exercised, and our muscles are atrophied. And that's one of the problems that we're really also trying to address with these troublemaker schools, is to really help people get some of that muscle memory back about what it's like to stand up and fight. Because I think that if you don't have an experience acting together with your coworkers, confronting the powerful, actually standing up for your rights, it's something that you got to learn and you got to practice. And so we're just trying to kind of sow the seeds and get people exercising those muscles, because the more you exercise it, the stronger you get, the more you can do. And that's very much, you know, our theory as well on how we, you know, start to rebuild some of the working class power that we've lost in this country over the last two generations. Just want to really encourage people to come out on Saturday. It's going to be a great day. I think it's going to be a real shot in the arm for folks who are down in the trenches. And certainly we're going to have a lot of great connections and a lot of sparks are going to fly. So I hope all the listeners in the KBOO audience can show up. It's going to be a great time.
That was Mark Brenner of Labor Notes Magazine on the 2013 Portland Troublemaker School. Next, we'll hear an excerpt from an interview with Joe Burns, veteran troublemaker, union negotiator, and author, who will also be presenting at the Troublemaker School on April 13th.
My first book was published in 2011, which was Reviving the Strike, which looks at labor history and economics to argue that we need a strike to revive the labor movement. I'm currently working on my second book, which will be published in April 2014, which looks at the great public employee strike wave of the 1960s and 70s, where, you know, hundreds of thousands of, you know, working people were willing to violate the judicial injunctions in order to win their union. So I've also written, you know, a fair degree of articles in Working in These Times and Labor Notes and other publications.
Can you tell me, what do you feel are the pivotal developments that have led organized labor to where it is?
We can really look at over the last 80 years, employers have been able to reshape labor law to outlaw effective strike activity. And it's led to a situation where trade unions are fighting with their hands tied behind their backs. It makes it extremely difficult to win strikes nowadays. So basically, when employers launched this offensive against trade unionism in the 1980s in the private sector, unions tried to fight back, but they kept on losing strikes, and eventually unions just quit striking. And what we found over the last 15, 20 years is, without a strike, trade unions aren't really able to leverage enough power to force employers to improve workers' lives, so we've had a declining labor movement.
And why is what happened in Wisconsin, which has been described as disappointing, significant in terms of how much support there is or isn't currently for organized labor?
I mean, I think what we see in Wisconsin was that was a grassroots upsurge where ordinary working people showed up at the Capitol. They were able to occupy the state Capitol for weeks, over 100,000 workers would be marching around the state Capitol. So it was really... That's really the amazing part about the Wisconsin struggle to me, and it really shows hope for the future of the labor movement. Because if you look at when labor has grown throughout history, it's been through these massive upsurges of worker self-activity, such as in the 1960s when, you know, hundreds of thousands of public workers all across the country, even in unlikely places, engaged in illegal strike activity and really won public employee unionism, and a similar process happened in the 1930s. So that's really, to me, that's really what Wisconsin points to. I think in the aftermath of that, you had a turn towards a legislative solution, which didn't work, but the beginning of it was very inspirational. It's an exciting time right now because there's a rediscovery of the strike among a lot of organizers. As we speak today, over 400 restaurant workers in New York City are out on a one-day strike. Apparently, they've shut down one restaurant and have really raised the issue of low-wage workers by using the power of the strike.
That was Joe Burns sharing his take on last week's fast food forward walkout. It's not too late to register for the 2013 Portland Troublemaker School. Your registration includes a light breakfast, lunch, and closing reception. Child care stipends are available, and no one will be turned away for lack of funds. Google Portland Troublemaker School to see the full agenda and registration details. And now for our musical interlude, a catchy song on the theme of austerity by local media collective B Media.
The fact that they are seeing, they've got an evil plan. They call it a solution, but it comes with harsh demands for spending cutbacks to the elderly and poor. They say to pull your bootstraps and stop asking for more about the vision. It's called austerity. They want it implemented from sea to burning sea, where money was spent on empire and drones. Tax cuts for the wealthy so they can have tin homes have been foreclosed on by banks who have no right. Neighborhoods resist this, taking on the fight. Fight for education, fight for free health care. Fight to save your pensions, and fight for what is fair and free elections. For that we raise our glass. No longer can they ignore an empowered working class. Sizes are growing, teachers are on strike. Students are resisting their tuition hike. Up to the bosses and tell them that you're done. From Europe to Tunisia, death strike all is 1% hold power. They act so big and strong, they rule with harsh oppression. We've got to right their wrong about the climate, wrong about clean coal, deforesting for progress. While pipelines up our solar has potential, but big oil rings the bell. We're stuck with false solutions while our planet goes to.
Hello, TV viewers! Don't you hate this song? We're broke because of handouts! They've gone on far too long ago we started our war against the poor! The crisis we created so we could sell the cure to all these problems is private sector growth! In order to have profits, we now must take this oath! Privatize the prisons, privatize the mill, privatize the water! This planet cannot fail! Free markets will flourish, economies will soar! Unions will be weakened, and then there'll be no more! Bus riders will pay more, losing stops along the way! Our roads will start to crumble, infrastructure will decay! Safety nets will get slashed, we'll challenge all they need! Regardless of elections, this outcome's guaranteed! Entitlements will fall them and say it's our downfall! We'll call rebel budgets and start the overhaul! Distractions will be plenty, we'll keep them entertained! No problems will be mentioned, free thought will be contained! Our media will help us with the uninformed remarks! Through private and the TV, we'll keep them in the D-A-R-K-D-A-R-K-D-A-R-K.
Hello, TV viewers, we've got just one request. Turn off this television and join us in protest. Let's build a better vision, our time has finally come. From Wisconsin to Chile, we all must stand as one.
That was B-Media's Austerity Song. Welcome back to KBOO Portland, 90.7 FM. You are listening to Labor Radio. More than 2 years ago, P.T. Kizone, while acting as a subcontractor to a group of transnational corporations selling athletic apparel, shut down the factory for fear that the employees were looking to unionize. Several universities have since discontinued their business relationship with Adidas thanks to the consistent pressure being applied by United Students Against Sweatshops. Activists upstaged New York's celebration of designer labels at Fashion Week earlier this year when students in support of workers from Indonesia stormed the stage to call out athletic wear giant Adidas. The sportswear company has, for over a year now, refused to pay $1.8 million in legally owed severance pay to nearly 3,000 workers. Joanna Tomas, statewide organizer for United Students Against Sweatshops, shared the details about what to expect during Tuesday's rally here in Portland.
So what we're going to do at this rally, our day of action, is that we're going to have students, organizations, universities all come together and pick it outside the Adidas headquarters. We're going to chalk the streets. We're going to do banner drops, and we're going to have former workers of Adidas, Indonesian workers, tell their stories about the hardship that they suffered since the factory closed down, their stories about friends and family who were affected, how the community struggled after the factory was closed down. And we want Adidas to receive the petitions that those workers gathered, telling Adidas that they want their severance and telling Adidas that they were humiliated by the offer to receive food vouchers instead of their paycheck. Not every factory, not every company is a sweatshop. And what really creates a sweatshop is the fact that the employers, the brands, the environment of the factory, which does union busting, that has horrible working environments, that treats their workers unfairly, the fact that workers continue to suffer in these conditions, and the fact that these workers have tried to unionize and have suffered severe consequences because of their actions. So those are just the typical characteristics of the sweatshop. If the factory ever decided to pay their workers a living wage, allow them to have a union at the factory, like, that's all it takes for it to change from the sweatshop to a factory where the apparel would be made responsibly.
That was United Students Against Sweatshops organizer Joanna Tomas on the difference between responsible sourcing and sweatshop labor. The Badidas Worker Tour is scheduled for a series of rallying events in the region. They were at Oregon State University in Corvallis today, visiting on the campus of Portland State University as we speak. But the main event is tomorrow, which will be held at the company's headquarters at 5055 North Greeley, just north of Going Street, on the Rose City's east side, at 4 o'clock, before moving on to Washington State later this week. And now get out your planners so we can tell you about the various actions in and around the state you can take part in. On Thursday, April 11th at 7 p.m. at the Friends Meeting House on 4312 Southeast Stark, meet Honduran human rights defender Padre Melo, director of Radio Progreso and of the Jesuit Social Action Center, ERIC. In the face of death threats and escalating violence in the country, Padre Melo continues his work to promote democracy and human rights for the region. Also on Thursday, April 11th at 6:30 p.m., the City of Portland is holding the final community budget forum before the mayor releases his proposed budget at the end of this month. The public forum is scheduled to start at 6:30, but if you're looking to address the council, plan to arrive early and sign up for a spot on the list of speakers. We interviewed local activist and parent Ann Trudeau about what's at stake for working families in this budget.
So far, the proposed budget cuts for the City of Portland are for 10% across the board in all City of Portland departments. This could result in the loss of many jobs and services, including, here's just a few things that it includes: closing 7 fire stations, eliminating many services for people who are houseless, like closing the Clark Center shelter. There will be cuts in parks and community centers, including closing Selwood Community Center and Buckman Pool, and reducing staff elsewhere. The first thing that you can do is, Solidarity Against Austerity Coalition is inviting the Portland community to attend the city budget hearing this Thursday, April 11th at 6 p.m., and it's at the Montgomery Park Building on Northwest 27th and Vaughan. And what you can do is sign up to testify there, and you can start talking about what are alternatives to these cuts.
Such as?
Solidarity Against Austerity, we're going to speak out against all cuts. We're not going to fall into the trap of saying, don't cut us, cut this other program. What we want to do is speak out against all cuts and show City Council there are alternatives to austerity. There is revenue. If we have fair corporate taxes, if we shift money from the Internal Services Fund, if we raise taxes on the very wealthy, there is enough money. It's a myth that there's not. The Solidarity Against Austerity movement is tied to a worldwide movement against austerity. This is a movement that unites workers and community that says we're not going to fight over crumbs. there is enough revenue, and we need a budget that values jobs, that values community, that values the people in the community. We can have a jobs program that creates jobs instead of destroys them. So we're asking people to come out and speak out from your experience and talk about how this budget affects you and talk about the alternatives.
That was Anne Trudeau with the People's Budget Project and Solidarity Against Austerity. On Wednesday, April 17th, from noon to 1, there will be a rally, march, and sit-in to save Salem's mail and stop the closure of Salem's post office distribution plant. Join Community and Postal Workers United to save jobs and save service at the Salem Main Post Office on 1050 25th Street, Southeast, just north of Mission. And on Saturday, April 20th, from 2 to 4 p.m., are you ready to help expose the next corporate power grab? The Oregon Fair Trade Campaign is hosting a coalition-building workshop and strategy session to oppose the Trans-Pacific Partnership at the Trade Building in downtown Portland, 310 Southwest 4th Avenue, 4th floor in the conference room. And of course, don't miss next Monday's Labor Radio with your hosts, Jamie Partridge and John Walsh. Tonight's Labor Radio, as well as more materials and websites mentioned in the show, can be found online at kboo.fm/laborradio. Stay tuned for Prison Pipeline at 6:30. This was Megan Heiss for Labor Radio, your KBOO show of, by, and for the working class.
The time is 6:29, and you're listening to KBOO, Portland 90.7. This KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Oregon Southwest Washington Carpenters Local 156, whose goal is to organize workers, provide a safe work environment, ensure livable wages, and elevate the moral and social condition of its members. Information online at ubc156.org. Up next is Prison Pipeline.
KBOO Community Radio Night for the 2013 Blazers season will be April 17th, the last home game of the regular season.
Tickets are limited for this unique opportunity where a portion of the proceeds will help support your community radio station.
More information can be found at kboo.fm/blazers.
Prison Pipeline is a radio program dedicated to educating the public about the Oregon criminal justice system. Topics include incarceration and reentry, addictions and mental health, elections and laws, victims' rights, and criminal justice reform. The program presents a unique understanding of the criminal justice system, addresses the root causes of crime, and challenges the status quo. It seeks to promote awareness and activism in order to foster a safer, healthier, and more just society.
Prison Pipeline airs on Monday evenings from 6:30 to 7 p.m. on KBOO Portland. Check us out every week. If you miss an episode, you can stream it later. Just go to kboo.fm/prisonpipeline. More info about upcoming shows and events related to the prison community can be found on our Facebook page, Prison Pipeline. Be sure to like us.
Baby, you understand me now. If sometimes you see that I'm mad, don't you know no one alive can always be an angel?
Good evening. This is Prison Pipeline on KBOO Portland. I'm Karen James. Prison Pipeline presents a unique perspective of the criminal justice system, addressing the root causes of crime and broadening understanding of the institution of incarceration. Tonight with me are Sharon and Ben. Ben was recently released from prison, but 7 years ago, when Ben was sent to prison, the couple lost everything. But after 12 years of marriage, they were committed to keeping their relationship strong and healthy. So they'll tell us about their struggles and how they kept their love alive during Ben's incarceration and what they've been experiencing since Ben's release. Welcome, Sharon and Ben.
Hi.
Hi, thank you.
So, Sharon, let's start with 6 years ago. when you learned that your husband was going to prison? He was leaving the family. He was leaving you. Tell us about that time.
It was a very hard time, and I didn't agree with everything that went on. I thought I lost my best friend and my soulmate, and I had a child that was 15 years old that I still needed to raise, and his dad wasn't going to be there.
What didn't you agree with?
I did not agree with the whole justice system and how it was brought down onto our family. I felt that I wasn't heard through the whole thing, and now they were taking my husband away.
And what emotions did you have around that?
I was confused. I was hurt. I cried a lot. I think I cried for the first year. Couldn't stop. I was angry at the system. I was angry that my husband wasn't there. There was a time, probably the second month that he was gone, it would have been easier if he would have just died instead of went to prison, because I didn't know that I could go through this without him being there.
So Sharon, how did what happened to Ben and his incarceration affect your life?
Well, as soon as we were in the county and going through lawyers and everything, it impacted us financially. We lost our retirement just before he was incarcerated into the prison system. I lost the house and had to pay the lawyers with the house. And then he was incarcerated. We tried to figure out a way for me to stay in contact with him financially. I had a job, and I had to give up my job to assist the lawyer in my husband's case.
So it was a full-time job just to gather information, the lawyer. Isn't that the lawyer's job?
Normally it's a lawyer's job, but in order to save some of the finances, I did a lot of legwork that we did not get charged for.
So you gave up your job in order to help the lawyer in your husband's case?
Correct. So after he was incarcerated, then I was looking for a job, and I found a job. And I had that job for